and welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today, we're in a slightly different setting. We are about to enter Europe's largest female prison. And I'm walking with a lady who is making powerful change. She's a professor of forensic psychology, from working with the United Nations to demonstrating the value of sport interventions in preventing youth crime, using sport as a tool for good. Professor Rosie Mook, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
It's kind of surreal sort of introducing you like that, because we first met through our love of movement.
That's right.
In a sweaty yoga studio in Richmond.
Bit different to this surroundings, huh?
Crazy. Isn't it amazing how sport brings so many people together? Well, if you can call yoga a sport, maybe more movement.
Yeah.
How it can bring people together from all different backgrounds.
And that's what I hope we'll get to talk about today, because that's what brings me to places like this. It's the power of sport to unite people.
So we are currently in the car park and we are approaching a prison. This is a first for the Monday Mile, but this is a regular occurrence for you.
It is. I am really privileged to work in prisons all around the country and overseas. And this being one of my most local prisons to the university where I'm based, it's somewhere I come very regularly, and I've built up a really good relationship with the staff here. And we've been able to do some really exciting programs here, which I'm looking forward to showing you and telling you about.
So as we enter, there is quite the process to actually getting into a prison as a visitor,
yes,
as a guest, which we are about to endure now.
Yeah.
So I believe we can't film that part. So we will put the camera away as we enter security, and we will see you on the other side. So we are in. It's not the most simple process getting into a prison, even as a visitor. Mm. I've had my sunglasses taken off me. We have no chewing gum. There are a multitude of items that cannot be bought in. Why is that?
You've got to remember, the primary purpose of imprisonment is security. So the main concern of the staff who run this place, the security element, really. And part of that is making sure things aren't brought in that shouldn't be here, and people are not coming in who shouldn't be here. So it's just part and parcel of working in prisons. We have to factor in plenty of time and really think very carefully about what we're bringing into a prison, because even a packet of chewing gum in our pocket would cause a major issue.
And why is that?
That's because chewing gum can be used to block locks. And of course, locks are a critical feature of any working prison.
And to get into this prison,
yeah,
it is a category.
Because it's a women's prison, there aren't different categories, but this prison does hold what we call restricted status prisoners. So it holds women who are being incarcerated for very serious offences, whereby security does have to be very good, but it also holds women down to those who are just serving a couple of weeks for non-violent offences. So it holds the whole range, which is one of the things I find fascinating about working in women's prisons.
Yeah, because then you've got a multitude of people that have all done different things that are then mixing.
That's right.
Which is kind of odd to a degree, because you've got really serious cases for something that might be seen as more minor in comparison. But let's tap into you. You are a professor of forensic psychology.
Yeah.
For those that might not know, what does that even mean, Rosie?
Well, forensic psychology really means it's applying psychology in any forensic setting. So I've got colleagues or my own students. I teach on a master's in forensic psychology program. Other forensic psychologists might work with the police. They might work with probation. They might work on the crime scene or in the courts. I have a specialism working in prison, particularly supporting people in preparation for their release from prison.
And what does that look like, the release program? Because I've been very fortunate enough to come in here with you. We mentioned earlier in the podcast that we met through our love of movement.
Yeah.
And I came in to speak to some of the women, which I absolutely loved that process. But what are the steps that are being put into place to allow women to leave prison in a better state?
So that's one of my particular areas of focus, is looking at people who are nearing release, because we've got to remember, most people who are serving a prison sentence today, men and women, will be coming out at some point. And aside from security, one of the primary purposes of imprisonment is to rehabilitate people. And that's where people like myself come in, because I personally believe, and a lot of the people I work with believe, that we have a responsibility to support people in prison to come out and lead more law-abiding lives, to reduce the likelihood of them reoffending, which ultimately serves all of us. We want safer communities. We want fewer future victims of crime. And that's why I do what I do. It's not just about making prisons a more humane and decent place, although that is also important. But my research looks at what we can do to support people in the preparation for release, which means that they are returning to the community and maybe taking up work, taking up employment, maybe going into more settled community situations, and ultimately are less likely to reoffend.
And here at Bronzefield, what are those steps being put into play? Because I know as a gift, I received a lovely present from you, and it's a cushion that's been hand sewn by a prisoner.
That's right.
Are there many opportunities like that for offenders to get involved with whilst they're here in prison?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, prisons are dark, depressing places where there's some extreme brutality and very unwell people at times. It's not an easy environment to work in.
I'm going to interrupt you there, because as someone in your field, how do you feel about that? You mentioned the word brutality. Do you think that is what it should be like, based on the consequences of what some of these men or women may have done?
No, I mean, we've got to remember legally that depriving people of their liberty is the punishment. Once people come to prison, we don't need to be inflicting further punishment on them. Depriving anyone of their liberty is the ultimate punishment. So we have a responsibility as professionals, and in my discipline, psychology in particular, to be supporting people from the moment they get convicted of an offence and have their liberty taken away, so that they can develop. And you mentioned the great work of a charity called Fine Cell Work, which uses the arts to support people in prison. And I also am particularly keen on working across the arts, as well as sport, movement, physical activity, because for me, that's where we've seen some of the greatest impact, in my experience, of supporting people to turn their lives around.
Have you got an example of someone that has come from prison and is now living a fulfilled life through the act of movement and sport?
Absolutely. I can think of dozens as soon as you say that. Well, I mean, I can't talk about individual cases, but to give you an example, lots of people who end up in prison have had really negative experiences of education. They have statistically been more likely to be excluded from school. They haven't received any formal qualifications, and they've had really negative experiences of being in a classroom. And one of the areas of work that I've really enjoyed and seen some of the most profound changes have been in using sport and physical activity to encourage people to fall in love with learning and to realize that they do have potential and that they can enjoy study and training. And I've worked with so many people who have ended up becoming personal trainers or have done some basic qualifications in sports and fitness because they are passionate about sports and fitness. And then they've realized that actually they are good students and that they do have potential. And they've gone on to study maybe up to degree level whilst they've been in prison.
No way!
And even at my university, we've been able to support people coming out of prison to study. And that for me is some of the most rewarding things, because ultimately, as well as being a chartered psychologist, I'm an educator. I'm based in a university and I'm passionate about the importance of education. So that's just one example, but we also have people who have discovered that they're actually really good at a type of sport whilst they've been in prison. And that can be really profound, especially if someone has ended up in prison who has always been told negative things. They've never really had a positive identity. And they've always really just had their offending as their dominant identity. It can be so powerful if someone then discovers a passion for whatever it is, whether it's table tennis or yoga or running or going on the rowing machine in the gym, and that they can then start to use that to reshape their own identity, which ultimately, when they come out of prison, can serve them really well, because as we all know, there's huge social capital in being sporty and engaging in movement. You know, we met in a yoga studio. If we didn't both have a passion for yoga, we wouldn't be here today. We wouldn't have this connection that we have. So for me, it kind of transcends so much of the prison environment, particularly when we've got to remember that most people in prison have some acute health issues. Physical health is much poorer than people in the community. Mental health is much poorer, particularly in a women's prison. We know that self-harm rates are really acute. We know that psychological illness is a massive problem. And at the same time, we know the benefits of movement and physical activity in supporting people to be healthier physically as well as emotionally. And that's one of the reasons why I've ended up returning again and again to the value of sport and movement in our prisons.
Yeah, it's kind of surreal coming in here with you for the first time. I had no idea what to expect, and I really approached it with a blank canvas of no judgment.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you're immersed in a room of people that have offended in all different situations, but quite quickly, we can find a common ground.
Yes.
With the prisoners speaking about movement and how it can instill a place of purpose. Talk to me a little bit about the wellbeing program that you've helped to install and support here at this prison.
Well, we're really lucky here at Bronzeville because there is a wonderful team of staff working in the gym, overseen by a wellbeing manager who is really open-minded, particularly to partnerships with outside organisations coming in and supporting the women in this prison. And as you've seen from the whole process of coming in, it's not easy.
No, it's really not,
is it? And it can be a real challenge to get outside organisations to come into our prisons. But Bronzeville in particular have been really proactive in that and very supportive when I've asked to bring people like yourselves, as well as other sporting groups and bodies in, because they recognise the value of that. And that's also something of value which can support people when they leave the prison. If we're able to support people with those relationships with community groups, clubs, sporting activities, which they know they can pick up the day they're released and onwards, that's actually really powerful and can be massively transformative. And you experienced that when you came in. It was really wonderful to witness. Those women, they wanted to hear your story. They were inspired by you. They particularly talked after your visit about how frank you were about your transition from being an elite athlete and how movement had really served you in a positive way during some difficult times in your life. And they took that away and they applied it to their own lives, which was so rewarding to see.
I think from my experience coming in, seeing like the exchange of morals. So the first time I came in and we spoke to that room of people and you kindly got books for everyone, and one of the ladies actually then went and told one of her friends that was in the same prison that she needed to come back, and she was somebody that hadn't moved, hadn't turned up before, but purely through the book, the conversation, the exchange of energy, the exchange of outside energy coming in, she then turned up again with her friend and shared the book with her. So I think there's also so much learning that can be done when people do come in. Why do you think it is that people might be hesitant about giving that support and stepping forward? Because for me, it felt very natural, but you're saying that that support hasn't been forthcoming.
There are lots of reasons. I mean, one of the primary ones is it's understandably difficult to come in. And a lot of my work now, some of the things I'm most proud of doing in recent months and years, is setting up relationships between different prisons and sporting groups and bodies, and almost being the matchmaker and bringing them together because I know
like
they can really benefit.
Like a dating matchmaker.
That's it. I think that's really powerful because prisons do an amazing job of holding those in their care, but they're not so good by their very nature of looking to the outside community, making those connections, which I think are so important. So security wise, it takes a lot of time to come into a prison. You can't just pop in,
bowl in.
It does take time. It does take a considerable amount of resource, and also it takes staff time. And we've got to remember we're operating in a period of something of a staffing crisis in our prisons right now. We don't have enough staff.
Let's talk about that. Recently, in the news, there's been a lot with the changing of government, saying that prisoners are going to be released potentially earlier. So it's going to be reviewed at 40% of their sentence.
That's right.
How do you feel about that? And how can we make change?
I mean, ultimately, I'm of the view that we do some amazing work in our prisons, but we can't do that amazing work when our prisons are overcrowded and we don't have enough staff to be able to support the sometimes very vulnerable people who are in their care. And I do personally feel like we incarcerate too many people for too long. Don't get me wrong, I think there are some very dangerous people in society who do need to be kept in a prison. But there are also a lot of people, and I include a lot of people in women's prisons, who are serving relatively short sentences for non-violent offences. And my argument is many of these people, particularly women, could be serving those sentences in community settings, be punished in alternative ways, rather than separating, in women's case often, from their children when they're the primary caregiver and then having catastrophic impacts on the children of those women who have been incarcerated. So my starting point is I think we need to reduce the number of people in our prisons. Remember, as a nation, we incarcerate more people than any other country in Western Europe. That isn't serving us well. Our reoffending rate is stubbornly high. We need to have fewer people in our prisons in order to be able to support those people in our prisons to be rehabilitated. So I do welcome this policy change, and we've got to remember it only applies to non-violent offenders. And we also got to remember that over the last decade, people have been serving longer periods of time for the same offences. So over the years, we have become as a nation more punitive in how we respond to people convicted of crimes. And perhaps it is an opportunity now to start to think about how we can reduce the pressure on our prisons so that we can then offer the educational, therapeutic, really powerful programs in our prisons, which we know can lead to fewer instances of reoffending and safer communities.
What steps do you think we can put in place to prevent offending in the first place?
So we know from research, and I go through this with my students in the classroom, that there are all sorts of risk factors of people winding up in the criminal justice system. And then once they are in the criminal justice system, it's a really expensive way of responding to them. So I'm really glad you bring this up, because ultimately we should be thinking more creatively about preventative approaches. We should be looking at children who are coming into conflict with the law, or children who are being excluded from school regularly, and what we can do to divert them away from the criminal justice system. We've seen an absolute obliteration of youth services in this country in recent years. We need to reinvest, in my opinion, in really good quality local youth services. And it'll come as no surprise to you, I think we should include sport and physical activity as part of that. Sport and physical activity can be a brilliant way of bringing together particularly young people in communities where we want to engage with them and we want to divert them away from crime.
Because it's a well-known fact, I know many athletes that say that the athletics track, for example, kept them off the streets.
Yeah.
The same with football. So many different sports are a positive distraction and an outlet for creativity. When it comes to yourself and your role on the Monday Mile podcast, we always delve into routine. But to do what you do as a professor of psychology must require you to be in a state of clarity mentally. How do you manage your own well-being with all the traveling to different prisons to implement that work?
That's a great question. And I do need to remind myself of the importance of that sometimes, not least because as an academic, so much of my world is cerebral. It's in my mind. And if I'm not careful, I can get really caught up in, you know, my next writing deadline or writing my lectures or engaging with my students and forget that for me, movement is massively important. And unless I look after my own well-being, I'm not going to be able to serve the students, the colleagues, and the prison population who I work with. So for me, it's a lot about factoring into my day movement, whether it's yoga, walking, riding, cycling, swimming, going to the gym, whatever it is. And we've talked about this, even if it's just for a little fraction of my day, I know I will get clarity through that. I swear I've written some of my best work whilst I'm out riding or walking. It comes to me if I've got a difficult thing that I'm working on. I can work through that through the movement. And then at the same time, something like yoga is so important to me because it forces me to come out of my mind for a bit and focus on my body and ground myself. And I do need to do that for my own well-being because, as I'm sure you can appreciate, I work in some really challenging situations. Yeah. And I deal with some really sad situations. And as a bit of an empath, I need to find strategies to leave at the gate when I leave the prison. And I don't always find that easy, but I have to be able to do that as a professional.
There's real strength in being able to go to work, do your job, and not take it home with you. So to work in this environment, the staff in this prison, prisons all around the country, it definitely requires a certain type of person. You've got to be strong, you've got to be confident, you've got to be resilient and open.
Yeah.
The prisons are understaffed. How do we change that? Why is there this big problem?
We do have some incredible people working in our prisons. Don't get me wrong, I don't want to criticise these staff. They're working under amazing pressures and doing...
We love you, Wayne.
..some wonderful work. But they need to have the space, like we just talked about, for their own well-being.
Yeah.
They need to be supported. And that's why I do think some of these partnership programmes that we've been able to set up have been really effective, because I'm a big fan of developing collaborations between prison staff and community groups, because that can serve everyone for the better. And if we can bring in organisations and governing bodies that represent sport into our prisons to work with our already amazing team of prison staff and to help, if you like, ease that transition from custody to the community, that's going to help everyone. But ultimately, we need enough staff to do the basics in our prisons in terms of unlocking people and getting them out of their cells. All too often, I'll go into a prison and the men and the women and the children in that prison are held behind their cell door, unable to engage in any meaningful activity because there aren't enough staff to bring them out safely to do so.
And in a prison like this, you need a certain amount of staff per prisoner, is that correct?
You do. I mean, that they're incredibly good in a place like this at managing risk. That's what they do. So they will weigh up how many officers they need at a given situation, or on a wing, or to create movement between different parts of the prison. And if they just don't have those members of staff, it won't happen. We also got to remember, a lot of people are having to escort prisoners out of the prison if they need medical treatment, for example, that they can't get within the prison. That takes up a lot of staffing time. So there's all sorts of extra pressures. And at the same time, our staff are really facing some really difficult days at work. It's not an easy job. They come into work knowing that they could deal with all sorts of challenges that day. And I think we do need to do more to support the amazing people who work in our prisons. And again, this is where sport and physical activity can come in, I think, because it can be a great way of engaging people in their own well-being.
So when it comes to that pathway, looking at release, not being judged by your past history, the gym really is a special place when it comes to finding purpose, because it's one place in the prison that people can actually go and feel somewhat normal because there is free movement there and they're out of their cell. Is that something that prisoners have the opportunity to do every day, or is it a luxury?
This is why I started doing work on sport and physical activity in prisons, because I was working in prisons and I was really struck by how the prison gym was somewhere where both the prisoners and the prison staff wanted to be. And that's quite unusual in a prison. And it was somewhere where relationships between the staff and those in their care were different. They were better. They were stronger. They were more respectful and more therapeutic in some ways. And that's why, as a psychologist, I started to want to explore what was going on there, and was really surprised that very few people had been looking at that in an academic context, which is why I've ended up devoting so much of my career to this topic. In terms of accessing the gym, there are minimum requirements in terms of the aims that individuals should get to engage in exercise and get outside in an area that we're in like this, or go to the gym. But again, there's limited capacity. So it's not that everyone will get that opportunity. And all too often, people who are maybe quite unwell won't necessarily get the opportunity to go and engage in the gym. And I personally think that some of the people we need to be encouraging in movement more are those who aren't your traditional sporty types, who haven't had that tool at their disposal and haven't experienced that, I think they're the people we need to be encouraging into our prison gyms. And that's what so much of my work at the moment is looking at. Who are those non-attendees who we can try and encourage?
So when it comes to your studies and your interest in that specific subject, what's been the most interesting discovery? And what excites you about making the change?
I suppose the thing that's come out of almost all my research in this area is it's not about the sport itself, which really matters. And you might have a counter argument to that. It's actually more about the relationships that are fostered.
I would 100% come on board with that, because that's where I'm at right now.
Right. So whether it's setting up a table tennis initiative or a football program or a park run, which we've been doing with great success in our prisons in recent years, it actually matters more that people are coming together in a positive environment. They're having an opportunity to support one another. And through that almost sort of coaching relationship, we're able to foster some really powerful, transformative interactions. That's particularly important in prisons, because a lot of the people I've worked with in prisons have been let down by the people in authority in their lives, whether it was their parental figures or teachers or social workers. And it's really powerful to see a more positive, transformative relationship develop through sport, which can then lead to so much more than a more traditional interaction between a prison officer, for example, and a prisoner. So that's one of the reasons I think people can be a bit surprised. I often say it doesn't matter about the sport. At the same time, there are certain activities which we know are particularly appealing.
Yeah.
Boxing is one, which I know you're a fan of, as am I, and I've been fighting for a very long time, and I will continue to fight to change the rule that at the moment boxing is not permitted in any of our
prisons. Interesting. Because boxing, actually, it's a sport of respect.
It is.
Discipline. You're 100% right. It doesn't matter specifically about the sport itself. It's about how it brings people together. So as somebody who was an athlete, I seek so much enjoyment, and you build relationships with people from all different backgrounds because it can bring you together. And I suppose in a prison, that is bringing the women of this prison together. And
absolutely,
we saw that when we came in. It was so, so special. The trust workshop, mm-hmm. We had the ladies climbing on top of each other, doing all different things, and seeing the enjoyment and the laughter and the relationship building in that instance was just absolutely magic. And as someone coming in, it's almost like addictive that you can come and very easily share that exchange of energy, and you can see how much they're getting out of it. When it comes to release, you're doing a lot in that space. What's the process like for someone actually leaving?
It can be actually incredibly scary for someone coming to the end of a sentence. I've had people tell me they don't actually feel ready, particularly if they're not going back to a supportive family, or they don't have stable housing to go back into, or they have massive financial worries, or for so many of the women here, they're concerned about re-establishing relationships with their children. It's not an easy transition to make, and we actually know that those early days after release from prison are some of the most high-risk periods for both drug overdose as well as for reoffending. So personally, I feel like we need to be providing as much support as we can as people near their release date. And if they don't have a supportive family to return to, we need to make sure that the services are in place, the wraparound support is there. There are some amazing charities working in this space who do exactly that. But it still comes back to, we have a housing crisis in this country. And if people are coming out of prison into homelessness, that's one of the biggest high-risk situations. And we're seeing that across the adult estate, as well as, unfortunately, with children and the young people in our prisons.
And that then instantly is going to turn into reoffending.
Absolutely.
Because no money, no house, what is the option?
The odds are stacked against someone in that situation.
That sucks.
It does. And as a society, we can do more and we should do more.
What does that look like though? Because it's easy to say that.
Services that support people as they come out of prison need to be able to support them early on in their sentence so that they can build up that trust and that rapport with them and can establish what sometimes are some quite complex needs are and how they can be responded to. It's not easy. Some of the people who end up in our prisons have had very complex lives before they've end up ended up in prison, and it's not necessarily a quick fix to support them in what we call desistance from crime. But we also know that returning people to prison again and again isn't working. It's very expensive. It costs more to send a kid to prison than it does to send them to Eton, the most expensive private school in the country.
Just down the road from here.
Absolutely.
The contrast.
Yep, the contrast is massive. This is public funds being spent incarcerating people. And this is why it always comes back to, for me, we need to be doing everything we can to support people so when they come out, they can lead those more positive law-abiding lives, which they want to lead more often than not. So many times people have told me they want to turn their lives around. They don't want to come back to prison. They'll do anything not to. And yet, sadly, a few weeks after they're released, I see them back behind prison walls again.
What I found interesting when I spoke to some of the women of the prison was how forward they were with acknowledging they're doing wrong. That was a really big takeaway from me. It was like, I've done wrong. I deserve to be here, which I found very interesting. How do you think it is that they've ended up with that mindset? Is that something that's implemented here?
Well, I think as a society, we really show that as part of the process of someone going to court, being sentenced in public, often by a jury, having the judge with their summing up remarks, and then that transition coming into custody. There are many, many repeated reminders on an individual of what they've done wrong. And I often say this to my students, it's bound to affect one's psyche if you're repeatedly
reminded
about the worst thing you've ever done and remembered for that rather than anything else. So part of the beauty of sport and physical activity is we can start to think about people in a different light. We can start to see someone as a really promising athlete or a really supportive coach or referee who's brilliant at explaining things to their fellow prisoners. And that's very powerful when all too often the justice system just reiterates to an individual what they've done wrong, but doesn't necessarily offer them an alternative.
It's incredible because this football pitch here can create small milestone achievements to give real purpose when day to day, I can imagine every day in prison looks very similar. We are, of course, on the Monday Mile podcast. Rosie, I've got to ask you what your relationship is like with Monday, the start of the week.
I love Mondays. I know it might be an unpopular thing to say, but I'm always excited on a Sunday. I set out some of my tasks for the week ahead. I try and make sure I'm much better at this now. I didn't used to be, but I make sure my weekends are much more around time with my friends and family and engaging in self-care and physical movement so that when Monday comes around, all being well, I may be on the road somewhere, I may be traveling, I may be in the classroom, I could be anywhere, but I make sure that I'm prepared and that I've set out what I'm going to be doing the day before. So I wake up hopefully fresh, do a bit of exercise and start the week with a bit of stamina.
So wholesome. If you were to leave a legacy and make change within this current system, what would it be?
I hope that one of my legacies, particularly with working with students who I'm so proud to see going into the world of criminal justice in their own rights now, I hope one of those legacies will be encouraging people to see people in prison as individuals. The prison population is as diverse as the population is outside of our prisons. And we need to remember that there is an opportunity to engage with many, many people in prison who want to do good. I'm always amazed when we set up charity activities in a prison and people do like a fundraising sports activities to raise money for charities. People want to do good. And it's all too easy in society to see people behind bars as monsters. And I'm not taking away from some of the really terrible things that have been done by people who are convicted and the victims who have experienced those terrible things. I'm not taking away from that for a moment, but I think we also need to look at the positive that people can contribute to society when they've served their time.
Professor Rosie Meek, thank you so much for joining us here on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. You've got a graduation to get
I
to.
I have, yeah. My students are graduating this afternoon.
I think I need to sign myself up so I can come back because there's a park run to get done.
That's right.
Here on the 9th of August.
We put you down as the tail walker.
Tail walker? I wanted to lead the charge. Monday Mile listeners, I really, really hope you enjoyed this slightly different, incredibly insightful podcast. You know what to do. Do make sure you subscribe. The audio drops every single Monday morning for the early risers. So hit that subscribe button and we'll see you next week. Have an absolutely wicked week. It's a wrap.